TalkZone.com!
TalkZone presents the Geek Speak Radio Show with your hosts, Henry and Romo. Your top spot for everything entertainment and pop culture, including TV, movies, comics, casting news, and more. Now, here are your hosts, Henry and Romo.
Oh, hi. Showtime, huh?
Yes, showtime.
Busy eating your leftover Halloween candy.
It's delicious.
Spit
this is my
out.
Morning break.
Hello, everybody. Breakfast. Welcome to the Geek Speak Radio Show. It's Friday, right?
Yep.
No sun, but my kind of weather outside. Finally. It feels like fall again.
Hey, and you got your French back, too. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I'm going to have a parade down the city for that. Close up all downtown.
Yeah, and have riots afterwards.
Yeah. Welcome to San Francisco.
Yeah. So, I mean, last night was fun for me.
Yeah, let's actually start talking about all the TV shows, because yesterday we weren't on, you guys. We replayed the other Brother Straws, but a pretty interesting conversation, especially when we got to talk about the 3D stuff.
Mm-hmm.
From the people who know, they worked on a little film called Avatar. You guys may have heard of it. So they kind of know what they're talking about. But we replayed that one only because I got a notice in the mail a couple weeks ago letting me know that yesterday, the fourth, we here in the neighborhood where the studios, we weren't going to have electricity because they're repairing phone lines or doing something. And I said, okay, fine, we'll just do a replay.
Yeah.
Now, the way it works here, those of you who are here in the San Francisco Bay Area, you guys know how PG&E works. The way I thought, I was going to tell our producer Dave, you know, just be ready with a replay, but we were going to do the show live because I figured, okay, you know, they'll shut it off at 7 in the morning, then it'll be back by 9:30 or something. They did shut it off at 7:30 in the morning. It didn't come back till the whole neighborhood was outside on their cell phones calling PG&E. Hey, we have no electricity, no nothing.
Yeah.
And they still had the nerve to tell us, you know, sir, on my computer it shows that there's no power outage in your area. I said, well, I'm standing here in the dark telling you that there is a power outage. So it was out pretty much all day.
Yeah, that's PG&E for you.
Yeah. One interesting thing I found about that is if anybody ever hits us with an EMP, we are going back to the dark ages because nobody knew what to do. There's no computers, no TV, no radio, unless you have, you know, battery powered one.
Yeah.
But, you know, my son and myself, we did what we do all the time, which is play outside or read some books.
Yeah. And I found out that it was very interesting that you said something like that because, I watched The Day After yesterday.
Yeah.
Nicholas Meyer's The Day After. And
where did you find it anyway?
Online.
Yeah.
Of course. So.
Yeah, see? Of course.
Yeah.
It's never online. Heard of, well, no, not anymore. Blockbuster, I was going to say. But yeah, that's gone now too.
But there was one scene where, you know, like what happened to you, you know, the power went out before the nuclear bomb was going to explode. But I thought it was very interesting how all the cars just stopped, all electronic appliances just stopped, you know, even the clocks went out. I mean, it was scary, but to understand, you know, like, you are right. You know, we can go back to the dark ages.
Yes. Back then, and ironically enough, that's what I was reading yesterday. I was rereading his book, The View from the Bridge, was out on paperback. I was rereading it again just because I liked it. And I was reading that section from The Day After.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the book, he was talking about when he went to the meeting, call it the standards and practices, which is really the censors for ABC. And they were telling him what he can put there, what he can put in, and what he has to take out of the movie, of The Day After. I mean, what was it called? Yeah, The Day After. I was going to say The Day After Tomorrow, but that was another one. Cause he does mention that one also in the book.
How
it's funny to hear him compare it that way. Cause he's right. The Day After was wasn't a happy, hey, you know, big spectacular TV of the week.
No, it was a social awareness type of show. It raised a lot of questions.
It was a real downer is what it was too. And then, like he says in the book, 30 years later, we have The Day After Tomorrow, which is described, New York Times or someone described it as a spectacular CG effect destruction of New York. And that kind of wasn't the message of the movie.
Yeah.
It was kind of be aware of global warming. This is what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But different times. But back to The Day After, that actually, the EMP,
yeah,
they told him he couldn't put that in there.
Really?
Yeah. And back then, they didn't know about it as much as we do today. Electromagnetic poles. What happens is, you know, electronics go out.
Yeah.
And they said, well, there's no proof of that. What proof do you have of that? And Nicholas Meyer sat there and said, well, what proof do you have that it doesn't happen? And it was that kind of meeting going back and forth. And, you saw it yesterday. Mm-hmm. We've all seen, those of you who've seen it, you saw what came out of it.
Yeah.
And it was pretty right on target with mm-hmm. Yeah, like the electronics do go out. That's what an EMP does. That's why EMP, you guys know it now from the Matrix.
Yeah.
That's what Neo and company used to get rid of the squiddies.
Yeah. The squiddies.
Yeah. But I was going to say, since we weren't on yesterday, we didn't get a chance to talk about Modern Family.
Yeah.
Another good episode.
Yeah.
What else? There was no Ordinary Family.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I kind of have to start watching it again only because it's going to be on for another season.
Yeah, it was a busy week, so we didn't have no time to talk about what was going on television or anything.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, NBC followed everybody else, deleting Undercovers from their DVR. They deleted it from their schedule, officially canceled.
Literally, it's under the covers.
Yeah.
You could put that in a body bag and send it away.
Well, that's one way to put it, but yeah, okay. So we didn't talk about Modern Family. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think?
Let me be. All right. So I would say that, it was all right.
Just all right.
It was all right. It was quick. It was witty. But again, I thought they could have done better. I mean, the Halloween episode was just really good. So for me, it was just, you know, going back to their daily lives. And, the one thing I liked was Phil's, relationship with
Claire.
Not with Claire, but with the Ooh. Smoke alarms.
Oh.
And how it kept on questioning his judgment of being a man, of being man enough.
Yeah.
So that was funny. And, do you want?
To me, the funniest part of the whole episode was Cam, taking Lily the commercial audition.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of parents who have done that or who are thinking of doing mm-hmm. that. And yeah, it's written funny. But that's exactly what happens sometimes. You take your kid to do whether it be a print commercial or a commercial where it's just, you know, babies.
Yeah.
And one of two things is going to happen. One is the kid is not going to sit still because, you know, there's camera. Because when you see the commercial, yeah. Obviously it's just one kid playing with a toy.
I've noticed it now that, you know, what's the lady's name, the baby's name?
What baby?
Cam's baby.
Lily.
Lily. She's growing up. So she's
a midget kid.
No, it didn't. So what's the kid's name? No, and noticing that she's growing up, you know, in front of our eyes, you're noticing her more looking off towards the camera, looking at what people are distracting her. So you do see that in with young kids. And, you know, I think that's what you're trying to say, right? Like
what I was going to say is, like I said, one of two things can happen. One is, when you see the commercial, the kid is just sitting there playing with the toy or the food or whatever mm-hmm. it is. But the reality is that that's probably about the 1,000th or 1,020th take.
Yeah.
Because the kid, like you just said, the kid is, you know, looking off and looking at the cameras. There's a lot of people on a commercial set.
Yeah.
It's just like a movie set. There's mm-hmm. cameras, there's clappers going, okay, take one, take 28. And, you know, the director just yells action. Everyone stays quiet and the kid's like, hey, what's going on here? And he's not going to, he or she is not going to follow their lines or whatever they need to do. So they have to do it over and over. And after a while, they get bored. Kids tend to do that. I don't know. They just do. So one of two things is going to happen. Either that's going to be a disaster or, in the rarer case, they actually go on to become actors, child actors.
That's true.
And this one, in a funny way, like always, but, you know, it's kind of sending the message, especially to nowadays when everybody thinks they're a star because of, you know, Facebook and Twitter. You just put your picture on there. It's like, oh, look at me. I'm a star. No, you're not a star. Same thing with parents who want to go out there and put their kids out in commercials. That's what they get.
Yeah, I mean it's also you get it.
You know, and it was funny how Cam was saying, you know, I'm a theater person. You don't understand. You don't understand. And Mitch, and he said, what? You did a high school play one time. That doesn't make you a theater person.
No, but it shows a side of Hollywood where parents don't really know that well because they're putting their kids, you know, first. You know, anything that has to do with, you know, risking your kids and, you know, them growing up and it's really dangerous though, but it happens, you know.
Yeah, and this show, I also love the writing.
Yeah.
Because they are not afraid to be PC.
Yeah.
Which is what every show is afraid of today. Mm-hmm. The only one that actually is finally becoming that also is Bleep My Dad, as we will talk about in a second. But Modern Family has been that from the beginning. I think that's why I like it so much. Because I don't play that PC game either. You guys know that. And this one, the whole thing was they needed two Asian kids for the commercial. And then two actors are doing the voiceover for the kids. And the actors, you know, that you have the two Asian kids, they're a boy and a girl. Lily's the girl, of course.
Yeah.
Sitting in a city, or a plastic city, or a cardboard city behind them. Yeah. And then the voice actors start talking in a very, very, what's the word? Very, over the top, I think it was Japanese or Korean accent.
Japanese, yeah.
Saying, yeah, oh, so no, we need to do this.
And it's very funny. The actors themselves, the voice actors, are not even Asian or Japanese. No. So it's kind of, you know, it is.
Yeah. Cam is having a heart attack over that. And so it's mentioned, like, and then the funniest thing is at the end when he pulls her out and he says, you know what? I'm going to take this kid out because this is too offensive. It's not offensive to you. And it's this commercial you signed up for. So I'm taking it out. And he goes and picks up Lily, except it's the other kid. So much says, Cam. Wrong one.
Yeah, he was saying something that, you know, she's not Japanese, she's Vietnamese.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, from day one, Modern Family has not played the PC game, and it's all the better for it.
Yeah.
And like I said, another one that hasn't finally is getting to what it's supposed to be is Bleep My Dad Says It. The one from a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. I missed it last week, the Halloween one.
I think
one.
You're the only one that's watching it now because I've just stopped watching it.
No, the ratings are through the roof. It's been renewed already. Wow. So obviously I'm not the only one watching it. But it is getting a lot funnier, a lot better. And I think it's because, like I said, now that they know that they're on for another season, mm-hmm. they can actually put some stories in there now.
All right, good. Are they playing Will Shatner's character better? I mean,
yes.
Good. Because that's the one thing that I thought was lacking.
And the best thing is his sons, they're actually not connecting with him because that's kind of the whole point, but they're mm-hmm. it looks natural now, the acting. It was very forced and stilted in the beginning, mm-hmm. Especially with the Henry character, the one that lives with him.
Yeah.
Now it's perfect. Now it's like you and me, where I look at you, you know, I'm gonna say, yeah. I look at you, yeah, I know what you're gonna eat. But yeah, I like it, and it is getting a lot funnier. Is the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
The jokes are coming. Everybody's laughing. Not the laugh track of people who, you know, myself, my wife, everybody's laughing at what they're saying now because it is funny now.
No, it's funny that you mentioned laugh track because I thought personally that you were using it too much.
Me? No.
No, the actual, you know, writers themselves for Bleep My Dad Said.
Well, yeah, because in the beginning, like I said, it wasn't that funny.
No.
So they kind of needed a laugh track. But the whole point of this conversation here mm-hmm. is going to the other side. Fringe. Finally, yes, it's back. You said you saw it twice. We're talking about it before it started. Why? What do you think?
There's I ended up going on you know, to the Fran official website, and I noticed that there was a lot of Easter eggs inside these films, and I was just getting really intrigued, so I had to go watch it again. And I noticed that there was, you know, the observers were there right before our eyes in this season. I didn't notice any, so I was really just.
Yeah, I told you they were in every episode.
Yeah, and so I went back to watch the episode just because I wanted to, you know, spot out some stuff and understand it better. And, you know, I loved it. I think it was really cool how they played the amber, you know, the smoke that turns into, I don't know, it was like a crystal gel.
By the way,
yeah.
You're a fan. Did you know who that was, the two twins?
The two twins, you know, they did look familiar.
Iceman from X-Men.
That's who it was. Yeah.
Sean Ashmore. Mm-hmm. That wasn't double camera. That he does have a twin, by the way.
Aaron, yeah, I know Ashmore. That. See, I knew he would look familiar. I knew he was just, yeah, that was a really good character.
Yeah. So big fan. Didn't even know who it was. Of course, he did have the beard in this one. Kind of looked like Charlie from Lost.
Yeah. But what I'm loving about it is that how Olivia ended up going back to our time or our world.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, it's going to escalate by maybe next week. Well, in 2 weeks, we'll see. She's going to join up with, of course, Henry. Not you, but the taxi driver Henry. So we'll see where that goes from.
Spoiler alert.
You'll hear it in the buzzer part two, a little kind of, sort of. But she's not going. She's not coming back.
What do you mean she's not coming back
here?
She's
not coming back to our world, not this season.
That would make perfect sense because why would you give it away too early, you know?
Man, no, really? People are thinking that that's how it's going to be the cliffhanger, that she comes back and does Fox Olivia go back or stay here or not. And again, you'll hear it in the buzz report in a few minutes, but the main thrust of this season is going to be that doomsday machine and the other side that Walton is trying to build with.
Yeah, what do you think about next week's episode? They're saying that the box itself is the key to the universe. in one of the trailers for next week.
I know, but I'm not going to say. Because I think it just broke the spoiler alert thing anyway.
No. Just like the Braum button?
No, that's still here somewhere. Oh. You guys hid it from me is what it is. but again, speaking of the Braum button, I'll find it during the break. Watch. If you guys want to annoy your coworkers with that, it's on geekspeakradioshow.com in the, I think it's in the news section. Just download it. And there you go. You can hit it whenever you want to drown somebody out.
I went on it. It's a cool website though. You get to just push the button and I'm clicking so many times that I want to make an epic sound. And then you let it and it has a good, nice tail reverb.
And then you break it.
And I do break it. The site crashes. But it's really cool.
So there you go. The other thing I did watch, just because it's on before, what is that called with the annoying nerd kid?
Oh, I didn't watch it. The Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, Big Bang Theory. Watched it again. Still not doing anything for me.
Man, I gave up on it on one episode that I've seen. It's not funny. I mean, yeah, I get it. It's a nerdy nerd geek. I mean, it's related to geek culture, but
yesterday
I was trying too hard.
Like everything else, that's why I'm a geek. I do watch it with an open mind, not just to make me laugh, but yeah, there's a lot of pop culture references in there, geek culture references, I should say, especially like yesterday, the Gorn when on the couch was there. That's a Star Trek reference there. But number one, they're not in context. Second of all, they're just thrown in just to say, hey, look.
Yeah.
No, really, look, we're geeks. Like, okay, not doing
it. I got
it.
The same. I mean, what's the one episode I noticed, the character Blossom, she was, you know, plays the guy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that's really
cool. You mean friend who's a girl?
Why?
They don't want to admit that it's a girlfriend.
Oh, all right. See, that's not funny. Just man up and be a girl, you know, that's your girlfriend. Then continue to a new story. I mean, yeah, I wasn't so big on that. I mean, given that he has a lot of cool shirts, and that, you know, that's it.
Yeah, you know what? I just hit on why I don't like it, why I find those annoying. Product placement. That's why I see it as. I don't see it as, hey, we're geeks. I just see it as product placement. Probably because it's in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when in a movie, the camera pans to whatever the scene
is. In the back of the room.
But you see Pepsi, you see, you know, all kind of Twizzlers, all kind of things in the background. It's like, all right.
Yeah, just his room looks like a comic store.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a comic book store, and it has a lot of cool, like, I think I saw the Green Lantern comic book hanging on his wall. Like, you know, just like really cool little things that you got that everyone could relate because they all have, you know, their own comic books. And
plus his character, I know he won the Emmy and everything. It's just really annoying.
Yeah.
I know if he was part of our crew here, I would have punched him in the face a long time ago. Like, you know what? Get out of here. Get out of my studio.
The one that's normal to me is the one from Roseanne.
Yeah.
He's like the normal one. You know, like every guy could relate to him. You know, he's a nerd, but yeah, he embraces
that's
it.
That's true.
He's a geek, but he embraces
last night,
it.
He actually reminded me of you.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, not in a good way.
Why?
That's because, you know, you're trying to play the cool guy when you meet a girl. So the girl says, hello, ring, means something. Oh, yeah, I didn't see that with my glasses off. I said, oh, there's Romo.
Yeah.
So there you go. Another good week of TV episodes. What'd you say?
At least I tried.
Yeah, and failed. Great Fringe, welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to have a parade in downtown San Francisco to celebrate the fact that it's back and see how many people will jump on my bandwagon. Believe My Dad Says keeps getting better. Modern Family is what it's always been. Great. So we'll be back. We talked to, we repeated it twice, so there's no way you could have missed it with the interview with the Brothers Straws.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention it to them when they were on the air, but we talked about it a little bit when we finished the interview with them. They're a company, Hydraulics. They're also doing the effects for a movie called Battle Los Angeles, Battle LA, mm-hmm. starring Aaron Eckhart. When was the Scream Awards? A couple weeks ago?
That was, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, whenever that was, Steve from Collider got to talk to Aaron Eckhart about, Battle LA.
Wow.
So you're gonna hear a little bit about that when we come back. In the meantime, you know what we gotta do? The Buzz Report. Like I said, there's some fringe stuff in there, so pay attention.
This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Friday, November 5th. Here's what's buzzing right now. Uncle Ben and Aunt May have been cast. Martin Sheen will play Uncle Ben Parker in the Spider-Man reboot, and Sally Field is in talks to be Aunt May. The Spider-Man reboot already has Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker / Spider-Man, Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, and Reezy fans as, presumably, the Lizard. Now, I told you a few days ago about John Slattery and Sam Elliott being considered for J. Jonah Jameson, although Sam has recently said he hasn't been approached about the role.
Director David O. Russell may reteam with Ice Cube for an untitled cop drama said to be along the lines of Dirty Harry and Death Wish. David O. and Ice Cube last worked together in 1999's Three Kings. Johnny Depp has signed on to star in Tim Burton's Dark Shadows, based on the ABC Gothic soap opera that featured Jonathan Frid as vampire Barnabas Collins, along with other supernatural creatures. Johnny Depp will play the role of Collins from a script by Seth Graham Smith. If you missed the Back to the Future screenings at AMC theaters last week, or you just want to see it again, Romo, AMC will be showing another screening tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. Check your local AMC theater to see if they're participating. AMC also announced the Harry Potter celebration on November 18th. For $20, you get to watch The Order of the Phoenix and The Half-Blood Prince, which leads into the first showings of The Deathly Hallows Part 1 at midnight. Not bad for $20, huh? I guess I know where I'll see all of you on the 18th, right? That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the GeekSpeak Radio Show Buzz Report.
GeekSpeak Radio Show will be right back. The website that gives you some real excitement without charging you by the minute.
It really is a lot of fun.
TalkZone.com. Spoiler warning ahead.
Check it out.
You're listening to the GeekSpeak Radio Show.
No one's going to stop it.
On TalkZone.com. Here's Henry and Romo.
And we are back on the Geek Speak Radio Show. What's wrong with you?
It's the song. Yeah. Yeah, I'm proud. We're proud.
Thank you, William Shatner. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, I did.
He was rapping
on the George Lopez show. Yeah. He was singing CeeLo's new single called...
Well, F you.
Yeah.
Really? That cancels music today? Welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. Whatever. They use this generation's favorite term. Whatever. What was I talking about? Oh. Battle LA, Battle Los Angeles. That's a movie that's coming out next year, March 11th
mm-hmm.
of next year. It's done. The effects are done, like I said, by the Brothers Strauss, who we talked to. Yeah, well, the day
two days ago, we heard
it again yesterday. Their company Hydraulics, they're doing the effects for this one. We talked about it. You and I talked about it. I didn't ask them, but Sony Pictures, who's doing both of them actually, Battle LA. They actually sued Hydraulics, claiming mm-hmm. that the brothers are using elements and effects from Battle LA for Skyline, which I don't know if you guys have seen. There's some teasers out there. There's some clips out there. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it looks the two movies look nothing at all like each other. Not the technology, the effects, they look nothing like each other. They really don't. Battle LA looks more, and it's been described that way, more like, what's that movie? Black Hawk Down meets Independence Day. Because it stars Aaron Eckhart, who you're going to hear from in just a few seconds.
Yeah.
Also, Michelle Rodriguez is in it, Bridget Moynihan, Michael Pena, and speaking of singers, Ne-Yo is in it also. and like I said, it's done. The effects were done by Hydraulics. The brothers did that. It's been settled with Sony. Pretty much it's, they're not using the effects. Because once you see the movie, the real reason why, they're not going to come out and say it, of course, but the real reason why is because they don't want Skyline to steal their thunder. But it kind of already is.
We already know that it's probably a better movie.
Yeah, I mean, I got emails, not yesterday because I had no electricity, so I couldn't go on the computer, but I got emails after the Wednesday interview.
Yeah.
Loving, especially the conversations that we had with about 3D and mm-hmm. where technology is going. But people, they were kind of surprised the way, I think it was Greg who described the movie, not as an alien invasion movie, but it's a survival movie.
Yeah.
And, the trailers, and I'm sure this is, the studio's marketing, but the trailers don't make it seem that way. It makes it seem like, aliens arrive and they have tentacles and they're going to step up. It kind of looks like Transformers.
Yeah, it does.
Especially that one scene when a car's coming out and it steps on it.
Yeah.
It looks like, Ironhide.
Oh, or the helicopter that's flying and this, I don't even know what it has, like a tentacle, and it just goes out and grabs it and sucks it in. And, you see.
Yeah, and I can see the studio's point of view and I'm wanting to market it that way.
Yeah.
Because, people want big flashing effects and Michael Bay kind of stuff, explosions, mm-hmm. and it's there in the trailer. But if this has, if I told the brothers, if I care about the characters, going back to what Jeff Loeb and uh-huh. Paul Dini said, we're there. It makes it even better. But I already know with this audience, see, because I'm gonna say something again that I've said before and it's always backfired on me. So I don't know if I should, it's kind of becoming like a Henry curse. I always say that I expect big things from this audience, and you guys never show up. Nobody went to see
then everyone's gonna see Let
Scott
Me In.
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, I think it's.
Well, they went to see it, but not enough people went to see Let Me In. Then
The Last Exorcism.
Yeah, same thing. Well, actually, that was it wasn't a huge hit, but it did it better than what they were expecting.
The Expendables, maybe.
No, that's what I mean. Is the Expendables? Everybody said, "Oh, we're going to see Scott Pilgrim." Expendables came in at number one. Scott Pilgrim came in at number
two,
six, or something.
Yeah.
So this one, I mean, everybody's been talking about it. Everybody has seen the commercials there because they're everywhere on every website and even during football, mm-hmm. during Modern Family, during everything,
even on Hulu. The banners are all on the line too.
I put a link on our Facebook page. The Brother Stars are going to be on Don't Look Up. It's got like 75 likes on there. So you guys, you know it's coming. You want to see it. So we'll see what happens. But again, this is going back to whenever the Scream Awards were, whenever they recorded live. On the red carpet, Steve from Collider, he got to talk to Aaron Eckhart, who stars in Battle LA. So he talked about that. And I want you to notice at the end, he asks Aaron Eckhart about his future projects that are coming up.
Uh-huh.
And he starts to tell him, but his publicist comes in and says that we can't talk about that yet. But I actually know what it is, and I'll let you know what that is after the interview.
Visit on your movie Battle LA, and something that struck me was how real it felt. You know, it just felt really intense. It felt like, you know, the way the camera was moving, and you seemed very intense on set. Could you sort of talk about the film and obviously your energy on set?
Well, I mean, yeah, it is an intense movie. The reason why I did this movie was because the director wanted to make it as urban combat, as real as you can get. The only thing that is different is that, you know, we didn't shoot real bullets and nobody got killed. You know, I mean, it was battle every single day, and that's the way I like to do movies. You know, I'm an actor. I get into my character. You know, if the world is being taken over by an enemy force, then that's an intense situation. So I'm intense 24 hours a day. You know, that's what I do for a living. You know, if I do a romantic comedy, then it's a different flavor. But I think the audience, these guys come out and dress up because they want to see the real thing. You know, and they appreciate when we as actors and filmmakers go to the wall for our characters in our films, you know, so I'm out there acting for these guys.
Well, when I was, I shouldn't say that, I was just going to, I'm probably embargoed, I won't reveal that bit of info. There's a military presence, you know, with real helicopters and there's a lot of real people there. Can you sort of talk about how you prepared?
Well, we went to boot camp. I prepared in advance, you know, went to boot camp, got familiar with our weapons and all that sort of thing. We all kind of ate, slept, you know, together and did the whole deal, man. I mean, we felt like we were, look, I mean, you're not a Marine, you're an actor, right? So I don't want to give that impression, but I mean, as close as you can get to, you know, being a unit, being one force together, you know, and to getting to know each other and caring about each other and, you know, watching each other's backs. And, you know, war is, yes, about winning and all that, but it's also about taking care of the guy next to you. That's what, you know, when times get tough, people are fighting for the guy next to them. And that's what our training and that's the message of the movie, is that we're all together and trying to do the right thing for each other. So that's what we trained on. We got to get, you know, that's what we did. So
you've done ADR on the film. Have you seen a lot of it?
Yeah.
What was your reaction?
I couldn't be happier. I'm blown away. I mean, Jonathan Liebsman, who directed it, Sony Pictures, I could not be more happy with it.
One last thing. What are you getting ready to do? What are you getting ready to
do? I'm going to go do a CIA...
Apparently you're not supposed to say anything to me.
It's the CIA.
Yeah, there we go. It's a cloak and dagger? I mean, what's going on? You're not allowed to talk about?
I guess... Oh, that's right. That's right. We haven't announced it. Sorry. I'm going surfing.
No, he's not joining the CIA. His publicist has stopped him. But this morning, I do know exactly what it is. He's playing an ex-CIA agent. The movie is going to be called The Expatriate. And he's going to play, like I said, the ex-CIA agent who hopes to make a fresh start with his estranged 15-year-old daughter. He takes a job in Belgium as a security expert for a multinational corporation and arrives one day to find that the corporation no longer exists. His co-workers are gone, and his assistant is really a trained operative out to kill him and his daughter. So that's what he was sort of
another spy about. Movie. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about something that Steve didn't ask him about, and we'll ask him if you ever have him on the air with us. Are you coming back as Two-Face? Because Two-Face, you know, they made it seem like he died.
He's still alive.
Gotham City. Everybody knew that he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
And obviously we're not going to get this guy behind us here.
The Joker.
Yeah. Well, the poster, not the person is here. we're obviously not going to get the Joker back. So we'll settle for it. Because he did a great job as Two-Face. Didn't take it over the top like Tommy Lee Jones did. And
yeah.
I think there was a Batman movie with Two-Face. I don't remember. I heard rumors. But he did a fantastic job. He certainly did a better job than Lando Calrissian did as Two-Face.
That's good.
Remember, he was Harvey Dent in one of the original Batman.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna say, "Oh, Batman's outfit with nipples," but let's not go there.
That movie never happened. What are you talking about? Who would think of doing something like that anyway?
Right.
Batman suit. Nah. Next thing you tell me, they had Batgirl in there or something. So with this one, like I said, he did a great job as Two-Face. So hopefully he does come back. Although, you know, with Tom Hardy there, whether he plays villain, whatever, I just want to see him, you know, in the same screen as Christian Bale.
Yeah, that's gonna be. I mean, I'm already expecting good things for The Dark Knight Rises because the cast alone it's gonna be superb, and the movie and the writing is just gonna be. I have no problems. I mean, I can't wait. So
yeah, so this one, like I said, it was an interview from Steve from Collider. He did this one not 3 weeks or whenever it was when the Scream Awards. This is for Battle Los Angeles, Battle LA as it's called.
Yeah,
effects done. I'm losing my voice. Effects done by Hydraulics, the brother Strauss. It stars, obviously, Aaron Eckhart, Michelle Rodriguez, Bridget Moynihan, Michael Pena, and Neo. I don't know if he's going to sing to the aliens or how, because you hear that music, I'd leave the planet too.
Right.
So that, there you go, Aaron Eckhart talking about Battle LA.
I think they just needed another Will Smith character, that's all.
He didn't sing, though, to the aliens.
Well, Will Smith, you know, is another rapper.
Bad enough when he said, "Welcome to Earth."
Thanks,
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So, let me take a break. When we come back, I have some more clips for you. Something that happened already, but it happened more recently on Monday. It was a screening of These People Win. Scott Pilgrim, probably because it was free. I mean, you do it free, that's when you'll go. But Scott Pilgrim had a screening to promote the fact that it's coming out on DVD. And people, listeners, do not disappoint us this time. Go buy it on Blu-ray. Yeah. You didn't go watch it in theater, so go buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You say it's your movie. Prove it. Go buy it on Blu-ray. Coming out on Tuesday. So let me take a break. Here's the Buzz Report. When we come back, we'll hear a Q&A session hosted by Guillermo del Toro. Nice.
This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Friday, November 5th. Here's what's buzzing right now. NBC has officially canceled Undercovers. The remaining episodes will run for 2 more weeks, with the last complete episode airing on December 1st. Now that MGM has filed for Chapter 11, the studio can move forward with production on its other major franchise, James Bond. MGM will own half the rights to James Bond 23, with an equal partner paying for all production costs. Future Bond movies will be fully owned and financed by MGM, which plans on releasing the new Bond film every 2 years, starting in 2012. Legendary Pictures has announced the creation of Legendary Comics, with Bob Schreck as editor-in-chief. Neil Gaiman, Frank Miller, and Max Brooks have already attached themselves to the new company, which plans on publishing 4 to 6 graphic novels a year for both digital and print distribution. Head on over to GeekSpeakRadioShow.com for the full press release. Scarlett Johansson will be playing an alien who travels the world seducing and killing humans, until she decides to turn good and help humans fight off her even more evil fellow seductresses. Kind of sounds like Species, except those of you who have read Michael Faber's Under the Skin, which this movie is based on, know that's not the case at all. Another great Fringe episode of last night. Here's what we can look forward to. That weird machine that has something to do with Peter is, according to showrunner Joel Wyman, the main thrust of the whole season, and there will be real, tangible answers to what it all is. While the big revelations won't come until the end of the season, we will learn more about it in a couple episodes' time. That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the GeekSpeak Radio Show Buzz Report.
GeekSpeak Radio Show will be right back.
The talk of planet Earth. This is TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio.
Transmit.
And now, back to the GeekSpeak Radio Show on TalkZone.com. Here's Henry and Romo.
Hello. Welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. Friday. Feels like a Friday. So we heard from Aaron Eckhart, Battle Los Angeles. That was probably
Scream Awards.
Yeah. The other that we're going to hear now, like I said, happened this Monday. Mm-hmm. That was, where was it? In LA, I think. Yeah, Hollywood. At the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood Monday night, there was actually a screening for Scott Pilgrim. I believe, not sure, it doesn't say the details on the article I was reading, but I think they showed the actual Blu-ray on screen, which is what they did for, what do you call it, Back to the Future, which, hello, they're going to do again Saturday in case you missed it, or like you just want to see it again.
Yeah.
12:30 tomorrow. Check with your theater, see if they're doing it or not.
Nice.
And the one I like is the Harry Potter Experience. Of course, we're going to be there.
Well, no, I will. I
mean, $20. Yeah. You get to see three movies, including the new one.
It's worth it.
And you get some free stuff from, what do you call it, from Harry Potter, the new Harry Potter. So, like I said, this is put on by the American Cinematheque screening of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. It was at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood on Monday night. They showed the movie. People saw it, actually, probably because, you know, it was free, so they went there. Afterwards, there was a Q&A session with the director, Edgar Wright. Also, Scott Pilgrim was there, Michael Cera. and the comic book creator, Brian Lee O'Malley, he was also the part of the Q&A. The Q&A, the best part, the coolest thing, which is why there were tickets sold, now that I remember. It wasn't free. But I would buy tickets for this, too, because the moderator for the Q&A session was Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
So there you go. You get to hear from Guillermo, Michael Cera, Edgar Wright, all these cool people. And I got the whole thing is 85 minutes long. It's on geekspeakradioshow.com. I think I put it in the news section. Yeah, the news section.
Uh-huh.
Go in there if you want to watch the whole thing from beginning to end. It's off of Edgar Wright's blog, video blog. He put it on there so you can watch the whole thing there. But I'm going to play some clips for you right now, some interesting clips from Guillermo and gang. So this first one is going to be director Edgar Wright. He's talking. He was asked by, I think it was probably by Guillermo. He was asked, "Where'd you come up with the idea for Scott Pilgrim? When did you start thinking about making this? Because the idea, you know, obviously was Brian the comic book. But when did he come up with the idea to turn it into the ADD movie, as you called it? So here's his answer on that.
I've been working on this. I first read it in 2004 and first spoke to Brian in 2004.
It's been 6 years since we first spoke, I think.
Yeah. And at that time, I think sort of you were, how old were you? Like 16?
2004?
Yeah.
Let me do the math real quick.
It is a tricky question.
Well, I guess I was about 16.
So we waited until Michael was of legal drinking age to start making the film. But it was that thing when we first talked about it, and this was before Hot Fuzz was when I first started working on this.
You started showing me storyboards about it about 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time in the process. The first draft of the script existed before Hot Fuzz, and I think the first time I met Michael was on the Hot Fuzz press tour. But and it was there was a point I remember thinking that Michael would be perfect, but he was too young, and then it kind of came around to like, by the time of release, you were exactly the age of the cat.
So again, that's part of the Q&A. We listened to some clips from the Q&A from the Egyptian theater in Hollywood Monday night for the Scott Pilgrim showing, moderated by Guillermo del Toro. Now, and this one is what we like to do on this show, geek out.
Yeah.
Here, Guillermo and Edgar Wright, they're just geeking out about what they grew up watching. He mentions Flash Gordon, the Batman, the one that you like. That was one of their favorites.
Nice,
and he says something about why Guillermo likes it that I think you'll find pretty interesting.
Well, Flash Gordon, I don't think there's much Get Carter in Scott Pilgrim, but there's definitely quite a lot of Flash Gordon. And that's another film. I mean, I know that like a lot of the films that are like reference points for me on this are actually, I know, are favorites of Guillermo as well. Cause like Flash Gordon is a favorite of both of ours. So is Phantom of the Paradise. And Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, are you a big Beyond the Valley of the Dolls fan?
No, but I will say yes.
Okay, well, 2 out of 3.
But Flash Gordon is important in the sense that I think that movie, perhaps in a way that nobody had done much, certainly not at the time, takes stylistically a huge step into being a really risky. It's an incredibly risky interpretation that goes beyond the comic books because it's not people say, oh yes, it's comic book aesthetics. It isn't. It really becomes almost like a feast, like a happening of colors and shapes and sounds in the way that Scott Pilgrim is too.
Well, I was always a big fan of the Batman TV series but, you know, I also like Christopher Nolan's version and I like Tim Burton's version but what was interesting is the Batman TV series became like a dirty word for about 30 years because it was perceived to kind of, and it probably did, you know, make superhero films and TV shows less serious. And it was when Superman came back around that people and, you know, started to take things more seriously. But that shouldn't take away from Batman the TV series being amazing.
And it was an amazing, absurdist.
Absolutely.
Comedy. And it was everything from Cesar Romero's white mustache to the sound effects was, in my mind, was brilliant.
And the Dutch angles as well, like sort of.
And the fact that Batman was fat, which I always liked. Personally. I don't know why, but I did.
But what's interesting about that is that I felt that feeling within kind of like the film community that like, you know, something like Batman Begins with Dark Knight is kind of like sort of given rave reviews, but like sort of Batman the TV series should be kind of like sort of thought of as a joke and thinking, well, I think both kind of versions are right and true.
The beauty of interpretation of any myth or any comic is that if it allows to be riffed on in the right way, and even the most respectful of them will be sometimes not the right way, it will create different versions that they all can live in almost bizarro universes of each other. That's what I feel.
Where this kind of like fed into Scott Pilgrim, I felt, is that because of that, through like the 80s and 90s, right up to the present, like comic book movies had tried to achieve legitimacy by being more serious, and kind of the more serious they were, the more kind of they were real films, and like sort of, you know, The Dark Knight being the kind of the you know, the peak of that in a way.
So there you go. That's why Guillermo del Toro likes the original, the Adam West Batman that you like.
Because he's fat.
Is that the reason you like it?
No. But hey, Adam West does like to eat, though.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
But that munch, is pow, crunch, chew.
That's funny.
Yeah. So again, we're listening to some clips. Again, the whole thing is up on geekspeakradioshow.com, the news section. It's a 85-minute long Q&A thing. This happened Monday at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood after the Q&A session moderated by Guillermo del Toro with director Edgar Wright, creator Brian Lee O'Malley, and Scott Pilgrim himself, Michael Cera. So in this clip, what we're going to hear in this clip, this is, who is this? Guillermo. He's talking about video games.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we'll hear in another interview that I have coming up, probably in the next hour, he is actually working on some video games himself. But since this movie was made not just for geeks, but specifically for video game geeks.
Yeah.
They asked him, what about video games? So this is what he had to say about that.
Yeah, well, I think that the key, I'm incredibly in love with video games, but, I think that I'm trying to learn everything I can. I'm 46, and I think that the day I stop being curious about things is the day I really start aging, you know? I think that video games are such a beautiful narrative form, and I find that they are mostly things that, you know, they are like the comic books of today. When I was growing up, comic books got no respect at all. They still, a lot of the time, they don't. But video games have not been validated as a narrative form by the intelligentsia in a way. But they are such powerful games, they are so immersive, they are so beautifully designed. I learn a lot from them, and I'm trying to learn from them actually by creating a video game. Not so much fusing it with the movies. I think that my movies are influenced by them in the texture, the soundscape, and so on and so forth. But I think that it's really important for us to learn that language, because I think the narrative is going to transform in the next 10 to 15 years, truly. And I think it's going to transform in an earth-shattering way. And we're going to see it in our lifetime. And not for every movie, but movies are going to mutate into different narrative forms. And I, for one, know that I want to learn animation, video games, publishing, everything I can, because I'm learning. I want to know how it all works, because I think transmedia is more than a hip word. It's something that is going to happen, and I'm very aware of it. And I think that, you know, when you are in a truly great immersive moment in a video game, whether it's the Nazis flooding the subway in Berlin in Call of Duty World at War, or you are in just wandering on your horse in Shadow of the Colossus, or playing Flower, you know, I think that many of these things, frankly, should stay in that narrative form. I think it's very dangerous to adapt a video game, because ultimately the quality that makes them immersive it's perhaps unique to that form. And you're going to most likely f*** it up. And so I think that the greatest adaptation of a video game is the video game, in my mind. And I think they should be not adapted as if they need to be adapted, because they play by different rules that are not the Aristotelian three-act structure necessarily. And be respectful and saying, that book, that game is so great, it needs to be left alone. If you like it, print it and distribute it.
So how about now we hear from Scott Pilgrim himself?
Let's do it.
Michael Cera. Here's his reaction to Scott Pilgrim.
But let me ask you both, Michael, the first one is when you, I remember when the girl that shot Pan's Labyrinth with me, they asked her, was it scary to shoot the scene with the Pale Man? And she said, it was not scary to shoot, it was scary to watch. And I find shooting a movie like this, where all the pieces are so complicated, you think you have a grasp of it and so forth, when you saw it finally completed, what was your reaction?
Well, the first time I saw it was in Comic-Con with people who were huge fans of the graphic novel, so it was a really good crowd, unlike this... God damn. Just kidding. But it was really, it was played like a rock concert, or whatever kind of music you like. It played like a concert.
Opera.
And an opera. And
yeah!
It was very emotional. I had been having an emotional month, so it was just, it was all right. That's a joke, but it was very emotional. And when I watch the movie, I can remember everything that happened while we were shooting. And it's still, really moving every time I watch it. And in fact, every time I watch the movie, I say to the person next to me, hey, if you hear me crying during the movie, just wake me up, please.
Now, you and Damien went to see Scott Pilgrim in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite battle?
against one of the ex-boyfriends. He was this vegan guy, but he was able to, he had a really cool power. It was actually towards the end where you actually believed that Michael Cera himself, Scott Pilgrim, was going to be defeated. But, I would have to agree with Guillermo del Toro that this movie did really feel like a video game in the way they shot it and edited it. And so it was fun.
Okay. So let's find out what they're favorite battle scene is.
So favorite fight scenes, making them, shooting them, watching them,
etc.
The fight's kind of like really painstaking to kind of like make, because it's incredibly meticulous and it takes as long to make as it is. It's as long to make as it is.
Long to answer the question.
Yeah,
it is
make the fight.
You can sort of tell, like, even just thinking about the making of the fight scenes were fun to make, but they're incredibly intensive and meticulous. And the way that, like, Brad and Pung and his team kind of break it up in a fashion where the actors can think about one small chunk at a time. And as such, unlike if you're a Western action film, for the most part does, like, wide, mid, tight coverage. And in this kind of, every shot is as long as it is on screen, pretty much. And that's the way that, like, they do it in Hong Kong. And that's the way that we did it with this. My favorite one to, I didn't know what my favorite one to make was because they were all incredibly painstaking. I think my favorite ones to watch is, I like watching the Roxy one. And I like watching the Twins one because the Twins one is, maybe because it goes completely off from the book, but I think it was the last one to be finished, and so it always feels like the paint is still wet on the dragons. So I like watching the dragons one because it kind of starts to break out of the box completely into something completely bananas.
I was just going to say, regarding how complex the fights were, I remember times you were shooting a fight scene, like the last scene, the Gideon scene. I would like make eye contact with you, and I don't think you even knew I was in the city, like, at all. Like, we were looking straight at each other, and you were just in this fight. But yeah, I like most of them. I like the Lucas Lee one a lot. It was the first one you showed me. And just seeing Michael just break into battle, I was like, oh yeah, Michael Cera, check it out. But I love watching the Roxy fight. I love the thing with the hand and, like, the flip and just everything. That whole fight is amazing.
I like the Lucas Lee fight a lot too, because that was the first one we shot, I think, right?
Yeah.
And it was so funny that all of a sudden we were just, we had been training and then we went and shot for like over a month.
You shot the apartment stuff first?
Shot all the apartment stuff, all the Stephen Stills stuff. And then, and hadn't been training consistently. And then all of a sudden we shot all this stuff up to the fight, and then it was like the next setup, we're like going into this fight all of a sudden. It's like, oh my god, this is really gonna happen. And and then, you know, I had the same reaction as Brian when I watched it. I was like, wow, Michael Cera.
Yeah, was it you guys' reaction too? Hey, Michael Cera's fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, that was some clips of after the screen, there was a Q&A session moderated by Guillermo del Toro with director Edgar Wright, creator Brian Lee O'Malley, and Scott Pilgrim himself, Michael Cera, who we just heard right now.
Yeah.
And again, that was so screening of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which comes out on Blu-ray and DVD next Tuesday. Okay, don't disappoint us this time. Go out there and get it.
I think everyone will.
Yeah, so I guess you guys liked it.
Yeah.
When you went to see it.
It's one of those movies you want to add to your collection, like Kick-Ass. It was original, so how could you not? It was fun.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking while they were talking there and also while I was listening to Aaron Eckhart earlier, I asked the Brothers Strauss earlier this week, and I was thinking about when we were talking about Fringe and Modern Family and all those, do they think that because of this 3D thing and the way the visual effects are catching up to the 3D technology, will there be a day when everything is just in 3D?
You know what?
Where you don't even need the
was Scott Pilgrim filmed in 3D?
I don't think so.
You didn't need it though. It was the way, like I said, the way they edited the visual effects on the film was stunning. So you didn't really need that 3D.
But that's the thing is that's fine for these kind of movies. Like you guys can't see the
horror films,
the posters that we
films.
Have back here, the genre films,
yeah,
the ones that we like, the summer blockbusters. But I'm talking about like Modern Family in 3D.
No,
Believe My Dad's is in 3D. There'll be a point where just everything is done in 3D.
No, I think what the Strauss brothers mentioned, or the brother Strauss mentioned, that it has to fit the story itself. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that, you know, let's say Due Date is in 3D. There would be no point. You know, I mean, that's just kind of...
Unless the kid is going to come flying at you.
Right, but I think 3D movies only work for animation films, like for kids.
Yeah, the one that because they have a lot Zack of Snyder did, the Owl one. What was it called? The Legends of the Guardians. That was... Perfect.
Yeah, like Harry Potter.
It feels
maybe.
Like you're flying through in the sky with the owls.
Yeah, I don't think I see no purpose in why they did step it up in 3D, because there's no point. I mean, there has to be a point to it. You're not gonna want to watch. A love story in 3D. Like, let's just say The Notebook in 3D. It makes no sense.
Richie Cunningham. I mean, our producer Damon over here has something to say.
Yeah.
Why are you dressed like Richie Cunningham today?
I don't know. I just. Watching those Happy Day episodes.
Yeah, it's more like Boyz II Men. But yeah, what are you going to say?
Yeah, I have to go ahead and agree with Romo here. You know, 3D...
Wait, it almost pains you to say that? I have to agree with Romo?
Well, no, just, you know, you overdoing it on the 3D movies, putting 3D on everything, because it's the thing to do nowadays. It's not really cool to put it on movies tailored to it.
Yeah, I think they only work for horror films, action films.
Yeah.
Or, you know, kid films, because like they even said The Dark Knight cannot be filmed in 3D because it's too dark.
Yeah.
And, like, you need color for it to jump out at you. So, I mean, that's why it worked in Avatar.
Yeah, they also mentioned themselves, because I mentioned the comedy. I think it was Due Date or something that we talked about. They said it may detract from the movie itself.
Yeah.
The 3D gimmick may detract. I mean, and they admitted that, yeah, okay, kind of worked for Jackass.
Mm-hmm.
But for a movie like Due Date or The Little Fockers that's coming in December, do you really need a 3D for that?
No,
and
not at all.
It might detract from, you know, you're wearing the glasses, but, you know, it's already kind of in trouble as it was anyway. They had to go and bring back his dad. What's his name?
Mr. Focker.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's coming out in December. So let me take a break. When we come back, we're going to do what Guillermo del Toro and Edgar Wright did a few minutes ago, is geek out. And you guys are invited. Write down the numbers. 888, go for it. 888-463-6748. Comments at thegeekspeakradioshow.com is the phone number, is the email. Comments at thegeekspeakradioshow.com. What are we going to talk about? Well, stay right there. When we come back, you'll find out.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back.